Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 50. We've got a big discussion going around WWDC from Apple. Brett, we'll kick it off first. Why is half your face yellow?
I actually was at the developer conference and I insulted Siri to one of the Siri developers. No, it was a soccer injury. I got headed in the face, not artificial intelligence related at all.
All right. All right. Well, we wish you a speedy recovery.
Thank you.
All right, Nick, you want to tee up the big announcements from the developer conference and then we can brainstorm around the implications and who's winners and losers here?
Yeah, I think the big announcement here is that the iPad finally got a calculator app, and that pretty much is the summary of everything we learned yesterday. No, I think
that calculator app is I think maybe the coolest thing to come out of it and a real illustration of good practical use of artificial intelligence. Like I was like, yeah, no, I want to use Apple's really like note taking function now, you know?
Yeah. So we got, I think, their comprehensive approach to generative AI. It's being deemed Apple Intelligence. I think it's a multi-layered approach with some capability on device and then some capability off device in the cloud. I think what we saw yesterday is a subset of features that were demoed. And I think you could categorize those as low-hanging fruit. We got image generation, text generation, Genmojis, which I think will be the hit feature for AI in the next couple of months into the next year. So being able to generate your own emojis, I'm sure that will catch on like wildfire. But really what we're seeing is Apple take an approach to AI, which we saw a bit at Google I/O, but the nature of it is agentic. So being able to carry out multiple tasks and functions off of a single prompt. I think Apple, Google, some of these hyperscalers are uniquely positioned to be able to do this because they own the current operating systems, whether it be mobile or desktop. They have an ecosystem where they're able to plug and play, use their first-party applications and the data that those applications provide to be able to carry out agentic capability. So Apple showed capability being able to query your photos or notes off of Siri. This is, I forgot to mention, Siri's getting a big upgrade. We like to joke around here that Siri's been dumb for quite a while. This maybe is when Siri finally becomes smart. So Siri is going to be the interface for this, you know, leap forward for Apple and AI. You'll be able to voice prompt and also text prompt. So if you want, you know, to maintain privacy in when you're speaking with Siri, you have now the option to do this in a text-based manner. And you know, this is again uniquely Siri is capable of uniquely Apple related prompting. So you can go into your photos, you can go into your notes, you can go into your mail application, you can text generate within messaging. So they're really leveraging this robust ecosystem, the billion plus install base, to be able to provide generative AI capabilities. And I think what's unique to this situation, one is leveraging now the application and app ecosystem. So I think one of the big announcements here, what they're calling App Intentions, is really important to focus on. App Intentions is going to allow Siri to deeply integrate within both first-party applications, but also third-party applications. So you can imagine they've essentially handed over a developer kit to all app companies to be able to build functionality for Siri. So you can imagine, I think the example we like to give around here is a company like Uber building out functionality for when you prompt Siri, hey, I need a ride hail in the next 5 minutes. It could now essentially query some of these ride hail services if they decide to open up on App Intentions. So that's kind of the longer term vision. And then the other component, and then we can get into the discussion, is this cloud-based querying and prompting. So there is a subset of queries that will happen on device, and then there will be a subset of queries that happen off device. And what they're hinting towards, and they're starting the partnership off with OpenAI, is that some of these model providers today will be available to those users when it is a cloud-based query or needs the cloud to fulfill the prompt. OpenAI is the first partner here. So you'll have essentially a message or a window pop up if you want to share this data and use this prompt to prompt towards OpenAI and ChatGPT. You have the option to do that. And then in the future, you'll be able to do this across other model providers and probably Apple's own cloud-based model as well. So multiple layers.
I'd clarify, I think the way it's going to work is they are going to default to using Apple's own in-house cloud-based model. And then you're going to have to proactively say, yes, I want to use GPT for this. And so people are comparing it to kind of like the Safari default search engine deal, where I type into Safari's browser bar something that's a search, it automatically queries Google for me, and then I get the Google results. And Google pays literally, I think it's in excess of tens of billions of dollars or around there per year for that default search traffic. Here, the user is having to say, yes, I really want to use this other engine in order to satisfy my query before it gets routed out to right now OpenAI. But they're clearly going to open this up to, I think they said in an interview, to Google, to Anthropic. And so I'm interested in seeing what the user experience is with Apple's own models, which are demonstrably weaker than state of the art. And I think I'm interested in seeing, they have a very small model running on device. How performant is it actually going to be for users, where it's like, oh yes, this is amazing? Or is there going to be actually a lot of leakage and loss and call it user disappointment through that on-device interface, such that people are like, oh, Siri's not smart now. Siri's just trying to do more things and still doing them poorly. Like, I think that would be the concern, is that, you know, they have to run the models on device. They have to be, you know, quite small, and kind of nobody, even Microsoft, which is trying to use the most powerful models in the world, has really enabled the type of seamless agentic navigating through end use applications workflows that Apple has presented that they're going after. And Apple's trying to do it on a much, much smaller performant system. And so you could have a set of users. This is their first real exposure to AI, but there's all different kinds of flavors of AI. And their exposure to Apple's version is like, oh, well, this is just kind of like Siri again, where I use it for novelty. I figure out like one or two things it can do. I generate some Genmojis for a while with my friends because it's kind of fun, but there's not real like ability to work and customize things. And then it's like, well, I just have the user interface I'm used to. And so that's what I stick with. I think that's mm-hmm. a possible outcome.
Well, it's like, I think there's a few things. Well, it seems like the battle here is distribution and context versus performance. And then the question is, it's like, does performance matter? And I think we can explore that. But it's like, at least the analogy right now is, if you want the best, the only thing that differentiates phones right now is camera quality, right? Like, that's the announcement. This camera is better each year. It gets a little better. And if you want the best camera, you buy an Android because those cameras are better. But no one really cares because the iPhone is good enough. And if you want that ecosystem, you're sticking with it. And I think you could say something similar with, it's like right now, I'd say most people, even people who use and probably pay for OpenAI, would not really know the difference between a great rewrite of an email versus a mediocre but good enough rewrite of an email, right?
I think I would challenge, I think you underestimate how mediocre they can be, one. Mm-hmm. And you can see in kind of like pairwise evaluation studies, like Apple's on device is roughly, you know, performs at kind of like it's like a GPT-3 type level, or early GPT-3, I think. We can look at benchmarks, but to me, it's like, there's a set of features that people will use with AI where I agree. It kind of doesn't, you don't need like a super performant system to be like, hey, make this sentence smaller, you know? And I think that Apple's positioning here is set up and anticipates, basically, we can identify the features that people want. We can slightly compress and nerf them and deliver good enough experiences, like they're doing with image generation, where it's like, well, you can't ask it to do any style. We're going to give the three styles that we think are good, and then you get to choose between those three. And that really simplifies the problem for them in terms of like delivering something that can happen on device, because it's like, I can't, you know, ask for like a Da Vinci style and a Botero style and a Monet style. I can only do like illustrated kind of anime and one other, like sketched. You know, which fits within the framework of, hey, this is a set of features we're going to layer on top of the existing set of operations that users do. If that's kind of what AI results in, it's like, we're going to keep doing things the same way, and then there's going to be like some AI sauce sprinkled on top, then they're great. You know, my belief is the capability of the systems is improving so rapidly that actually the entire user interface paradigm needs to be reconsidered. And being restricted to just three different flavors of doing something, or kind of like, hey, this model can only work to operate with the apps that happen to have kind of like integrated in the specific SDK that Apple's offered, is going to feel grossly limiting to at least an early adopter set of users who are realizing that, hey, actually I should have the expectation that an AI model can access anything that I deal with in my life. Like, there's, you know, my utility company is not going to develop specific to Apple's SDK to allow an AI model to figure out how to pay my utility bill or manage the auto pay settings in an automatic way. Maybe that's a bad
thing.
Wait, hold on, Nick,
I'm going to tee you up. I'm going to tee you up here. Yeah. So then let's say, okay, you get runaway AI capability where it's becoming, you know, not just a feature, but more than that. Nick, you just published a blog on kind of the change over here from various form factors. Brett, in that case, you know, what, you open on your iPhone, you open up the OpenAI app and then just ask it to do things. And then it's like, it's still in the Apple ecosystem, or is it, does there need to be a hardware shift for it to actually disrupt?
I think these models should operate independent of hardware. Like, they're performant enough that I want it to be able to kind of like link together all in my house right now. I have some Nest cameras and some stupid like HomeKit compatible cameras, and then a you know, the air conditioning system refuses to like deeply integrate with kind of Nest. So it has its own stupid thing that it operates, you know, and of those, you know, one of the three has taken the time and spent the resources to develop specific to Apple's backend. How do I control that stuff right now? Well, I have to know which apps to go to. I have to like, some of it's like not really app controllable. And it's like, think about how many user interfaces your life is fragmented across the open web, across your financial institutions, across the constellation of devices that you have, across your work and your personal computation. Like there's like a ton of fragmentation, even if you're like, I'm pretty well embedded in the Apple like constellation of devices. And so kind of like I think this will be like net a little useful for me. And I anticipate that just like, remember when they introduced the touch bar in the MacBook Pros? Then it's like, oh yes, this is the reason to buy a new MacBook Pro, because then people are going to develop to this and it's going to become a thing that people use all the time. And they eliminated it because not enough first party software came and said, yeah, we're going to develop specific to enable this particular functionality. And their user base was fragmented across people that could use it and those that couldn't. So then developers didn't have the incentive to do it. And so then it just kind of like withered. And there's the possibility, but not the guarantee, that that's how this kind of works, where Apple's first party apps all try to integrate this AI stuff very specifically. A set of third party developers kind of is like, yes, we're going to try to enable automations within this, just like some of them do deep linking and some of them do like the active thing on your iPhone. But it's not the default way people interact with the system. They're still using touch because that's what they're used to. And so then, yes, it's kind of like sustaining for them, but it still leaves them vulnerable to orthogonal disruption. I think that's where they're at.
Nick?
I think the only vector of orthogonal disruption happens through hardware coupled with the performative models you talk about, Brett. As in, you would need to build a capable hardware device akin to the smartphone or laptops or MacBooks that completely disrupt the ecosystems of Apple and Google. Otherwise, they will always have a competitive advantage over the model providers such as OpenAI, Anthropic, because those exist now just as applications within Apple's ecosystem. So Apple tells those companies what is and isn't allowed, what applications they can and cannot interact with. Whereas what Apple is doing, and I think the positioning and the way that they're going about this is truly brilliant, in that they're putting the onerous of agentic capability on, as you said, the third party application. So if you want to have Siri interact with your application, you have to build for that. And I do agree with you. I think it is a big if whether or not this takes off, but Siri becoming a de facto on-device search engine across the entire app ecosystem is that UI UX shift that needs to happen for generative AI to usher in a new operating system era. I think Siri, the way that they're positioning Siri, is as an operating system. As you know, your home screen is going to look wildly different. You now have you've always had, for the last few generations on iOS, you've had the ability to just hide applications off your home screen. I think what the home screen looks like in the future is just a search bar and it's just Siri. And you say, hey, I need X, Y, and Z from X, Y, and it goes about and it interacts with all of the different applications and it completely obfuscates the need to go into different applications. I need food delivery in the next 5 minutes. I want, you know, a buffalo chicken sandwich. It goes, finds the best buffalo chicken sandwich in the area for the best price and delivers it on time. I don't even know if it's DoorDash, Uber Eats. It's not going to matter to me because it's just going to be pricing and inventory. And this is something we outline in the blog. And I do think there is only a few companies at the way that the current ecosystems are set up that can actually execute on that. For developers to reorient themselves around, ChatGPT and OpenAI's equivalent of app intention, so integrating functionality, agentic functionality, takes a huge lift.
Wait, Apple, wait. This is the whole point. that if you are waiting for the developers to do it, it's not going to happen, at least at reasonable volume and scale, such that is it's a user interface that becomes trustworthy, as in I know I can do this thing, or I know I can do anything, and therefore I ask it anything, as opposed to being like, oh, now like at least DoorDash is integrated here, so I can ask for a sandwich, and sure, it triggers DoorDash, so I don't get price comparison, but that's enough, you know, as opposed to I can ask for anything. And the my belief about the capability of these systems, the frontier models, not Apple's model, is that they're going to become sufficiently performant that you won't need developers to enable it for the models to go and kind of like tap into the application and get what you want out of it. And the application meaning anything, like government services, you know, things that are will never, ever, ever, ever like actually like accommodate or kind of like bend themselves to facilitate frictionless user intention.
And so I think you're saying,
that's the whole point. If the models are asymptoting, imagine AI, we're at the kind of like late stages of AI and NVIDIA is going to fall apart here because who needs to buy, you know, 100 billion more GPUs because we've gotten enough and any additional performance, it's not that big a deal. Like basically being able to write language in a reasonably fluent way and generate some funny images is probably as good as we're going to get here. In that case, Apple's positioning is amazing. Like they win effectively. And my belief, and actually I think it's strongly evidence-based, is that no, we're not even close to the performance frontier of these models. And that kind of like their ability to kind of like navigate through, understand, and access resources is going to expand, not asymptote. And therefore, kind of like the way in which people interact with computation is going to change. You're not going to be tolerant of the fact that, hey, you know, I can use this like kind of quirky user interface that Apple has with Siri to do like five things. Previously, I could only do one. So it's a 5x improvement over before, but it's still like a menu of five implicit select options. And it's just not going to be one, the breakthrough that people like react to, like, wow, this is amazing. Two, it's really going to only marginally sell devices. And then three, it's going to be hard to get the entire developer ecosystem to support it, since only the, you know, first 2 years, like, you know, last year's iPhone and this year's iPhone are going to be able to support it. And so I think that it, from Apple's perspective, this is a strategic win. It's like, yes, we addressed AI, we can do this stuff. And I think from the street's perspective, they're like, yes, Apple did it. But from my perspective, it is only a win if AI capability is really asymptoting over, like, you know, now. Wait.
So can I just contextualize? Wait, Nick, just to put it, so back into the framing, we said Apple had context and distribution versus performance. You're saying performance increases to such an extent where Apple no longer has a context advantage, right? Because everyone will have context because the performance of the models will be so good that it's reading your emails, everything.
That's impossible without the access that Apple and Google provide. You can have as performant of a model as you want, but if you don't have the permission to access the data, then you don't have the context. Like what you're right. saying in theory, like it's like physics. It's like in a perfect simulation or in a vacuum of space, this is how everything should work. But the reality is that this is a lot messier and there are a lot of guardrails and privacy standards that get in the way of what you're talking about. And because Apple has set itself up as the standard for privacy, they have an advantage when it comes to what consumers are willing to hand over. So your credit card information, your home address, all of this contextual data, you would actually need to give an agentic AI to go out into the wilderness of the open web and purchase something for you or get meal delivery for you. Like those are hurdles that just because performance is better, you don't overcome. But Apple and Google and all of these companies
have
already
positively say that you don't overcome. It's like people used to say
it's a lot harder.
E-commerce will never work because people won't trust kind of putting their credit cards on the internet.
I agree.
Like,
I agree.
You know, there's plenty of examples where people.
My point is that I already trust Apple to do this. And it's not like they're, you know, behind the eight ball in at least from what I saw yesterday. I think they clearly see where this is headed. I don't know if they're like, I agree with you
I
that
disagree.
There is a, there is a,
I think that they are well positioned and they have a sound corporate strategy for where they're at, given both their strengths and weaknesses. That doesn't mean they see where it's headed. As in, I agree that context is really important. And, you know, if the way that they've pitched it, it can really operate, given the context that it has within the Apple ecosystem, I think people will find that useful. I think that kind of like their privacy stance, which is really fully considered and very protective of users, and I think net important, does enable them to like have users trust them with stuff that users otherwise wouldn't, at least within today's day and age. And it impairs their ability to iterate and develop. Part of the reason Siri's so bad, or at least some of the commentary I've read, is that they have such a strong kind of privacy barrier from their developers being able to figure out what people are using Siri for. And so that actually will impair their ability to develop here. Like, I think if like there's an open question, like Apple and Google's strategy is now very similar. And Google has none of the privacy qualms that Apple does. I mean, you know, they'll take all your data. And Google has better AI models. So like is really Apple saying, hey, here's a massively nerfed AI model and you can have restricted opt-in only access to GPT class models within our workflow in kind of a bulky way, really that great a stance relative to Google, which is like, we're going to use all of your data to try to get better at this stuff. And we're going to own all of the context on you and kind of deliver that whole experience to you. I mean, I'd say between the two, I'm not sure that Apple is better positioned.
Except Google never delivered a consumer delight.
But you keep saying that Apple is nerfing their models. So, but nerf compared to what? Because they're going to introduce models that are running within an ecosystem that they have no competition. As in, if you have text and image generation built directly into iMessage, there is no competition. Like if you watch if you go back and watch the presentation and the keynote specifically, they don't mention a single metric, standard, benchmark for any model. Basically what they said to the consumer was, AI will be built in as a feature across the entirety of iOS in the future. Don't worry about what models we're using. It's just going to work. From a consumer perspective, I think that's absolutely the right approach. And it's also drastically different compared to what we've seen from Google and Microsoft and OpenAI. They come out on stage and they start talking about metrics and they lose everyone. The average consumer, as soon as they start talking about parameter size and this and that and quantization, blah, 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 blah. The consumer just wants something that's going to work. And the reality is Apple is the only company for iOS that can deliver that. So it's really, really hard to open up a software vector of disruption if it's just an application that lives within Apple's ecosystem.
Okay. In 1984, IBM introduced TopView, which was the kind of like a application that was it was the mouse-based multitasking user interface on top of MS-DOS. They were a year ahead of Windows coming to market with this. It was the, quote, like most important product since the invention of the IBM PC at the time. And the idea was, everybody would develop their applications for this so they could multitask. It had, you know, mouse support. And also they had vertical integration with hardware and software. So it was very clear that kind of like the multitasking mouse-based interface would only cement their competitive positioning as the dominant player in the technology space. They got killed by Microsoft, right? And
but
why?
There's...
Why? It's because there's a change in the way in which we interact with computers that they couldn't, they, it was you TopView only worked on the highest performant PCs. And so then therefore they had trouble getting application developers to develop to their particular flavor. They spent a lot of resources, like literally themselves, making sure applications were working in this multitasking way. And it really, it was actually text-based, even though it supported a mouse. So it didn't actually take advantage of the new paradigm of how people are going to interact with computational systems. Open question. Do you think that with this new, just what you've seen in the developer keynote, that when you begin interacting with your phone, your default is going to be Siri first, or do you think it's going to be touch first?
5 years from now, it will be touched first to Siri. You text to Siri. I mean, and that's the reality of the situation. The reality is what is happening right now. The paradigm shift does not necessitate a new user interface or even new hardware. And I, you know, your example is fascinating, but the reality of that period was you were going through a hardware revolution. So there were, you know, multiple vectors of competition that IBM lost out on, you know, some of those that ended up handing Microsoft.
More than 90% of the market was IBM compatible PCs over the course of that year, and PC sales 10x'd. And IBM stock price fell in half and Microsoft went up by 10x.
Right. But you had how many PC startups out there trying to build, you know, new hardware to disrupt IBM? How many smartphone companies do you know? There's two. Right. Like it's like there's two operating systems. It's Android or iOS. There's no one out there trying to build new and innovative hardware that can.
A rabbit in the mail.
And I will not open it because it is truly a horrible experience, I've been told. So it's the point. It's you're not going to replace your iPhone for a rabbit or for a tab. Those are wearables. Those are extensions of your mobile phone.
You're over-indexing on kind of like the fact that in this cycle, kind of like the operating system has been tightly wedded and integrated with the hardware. Whereas the promise of kind of these AI systems is they should be able to operate independently of the hardware. And that's like you said, the hardware is powerful because it's distribution, right? As in, you know, the reason even OpenAI made this deal with Apple is because they want those user queries. They want, you know, the volume of user queries flowing through. And I'm somewhat skeptical how much they're actually going to get, because the way it's set up for Apple, you know, like who is the user who is going through the Apple interface and then saying, yes, I'm going to opt in to use GPT-4 for this thing? That's going to be a minority of queries here. I don't think that that's because it's not, it's set up like way at the back end of the experience. The whole promise of these AI models is it changes the front end of the experience. If you have an existing front end experience that you're trying to preserve, a user interface and a kind of legacy set of users that are used to operating with their computers or computational devices in a certain way, it's very, very, very difficult to take, you know, wholly orthogonal and different capability and be like, now we're going to reimagine this experience. Instead, you layer it on top. And that's what they're doing.
Now I get questions.
That's what Apple's doing. That's the future. Like that is like that. There is no way to disrupt that orthogonally, because if you're building on top of the app ecosystem, which you
there's
created,
always a way to disrupt orthogonally,
and through hardware, but
we've identified the point of agreement and disagreement. Your position is basically like we're going to be operating on like pane of glass, touchscreen phones perpetually. That's always going to be the front end to user experience. And I think it actually user experience is going to fragment across a whole like number of devices, including devices in your home, including, you know, and that there's going to be a common operating system across all of those experiences that's going to be driven by AI, how performant those systems are going to become.
All right. You need to own the hardware to be able to introduce that, though. You can't just
You're over-indexing on this past cycle because if it's performant enough, users are going to either give permission for it to access the hardware, or they're going to get hardware that allows the system to access the information it needs, including through the open web. Like it's possible that you could give, you know, an AI agent just your iCloud credentials rather than giving it access to your physical hardware device. And that would be sufficient to give it context to be really performant in a bunch of different kind of operating environments. And by the way, I have a Gmail account. I have an iCloud account. I have, you know, Outlook through corporate. I have, you know, I think most people have kind of like a set of overlapping relationships across a number of different vendors. And there is the need for something that can cross those gaps. And it, and Apple is not pushing in that direction at all. Clearly, they would rather, like, you know, sell their hardware, stick everybody on their stack and their stack only. And anything that's off, they want people to let wither because it's inconvenient relative to the way that they've designed it.
That it, if that's what you're saying, then the only other company that can introduce that would be Google, right? Because what you're describing is kind of Google's ecosystem, where they release the software out there and, you know, it's used across different OEMs to build hardware, right? Like Android powers the rest of the smartphone market. It's split and forked to different home operating systems. That's how the current landscape has evolved. It's one or the other, but it's going to be built on the, it's going to be layered on top of either Android or iOS, and it will happen on both. And one will still remain vertically integrated. And one, as you put it, will be, you know, hardware independent, or, you know, there will be hardware operators that build on top. Rabbit was built on top of Android.
Yeah, it was built on top of a fork of Android. I mean, there's plenty of the, my, you know, there's plenty of things that are built on top of Android that have, that are paying no vig back to, back to Google. To me, there is no, there's not a natural, kind of like, reason why, the AI models that win have to be, shackled to a particular hardware ecosystem. In fact, I think that fragmentation across the hardware ecosystem, including across devices that we don't see as computational devices today, take cars or your refrigerator or kind of anything that plugs in your whole house, you know, that is the angle across which performant models can splay.
Okay, so now questions. All right. So just to understand, you're saying anything that's connected to the internet. So you go up to your fridge, it's connected to the internet. So you can say it's running OpenAI, and you can say, you know, hey, you're
open
here.
OpenAI can access it. Though maybe there's a front end interface to a language model of your choice. Yes, maybe. Yes.
Right. So then you can tell your fridge, like, hey, buy me new shoes. And if it has access to the model, it can do that.
Yes, I think that's a possible future.
Okay, but then
so Apple's downfall happens because refrigerators become smart. Like, this is insanity.
Nick, get out of here! Get out of here! Get out of here! Okay, so then in this runaway world of AI capability, is it one player? Is it multiple players?
Well, I think that there's a handful and maybe a few players that have like frontier model type capabilities on the back end that are then able to access and kind of use resources on behalf of users.
But as they become more capable, isn't there, it's like, I feel like the issue or one thing you said is, it's like with the context in Apple, it's like, if it can't do everything, then people will stop using it and don't like it, which I agree. But it's like, I actually feel like that's where Apple's strength is, because it's like right now, even the people who make AI models don't know what they can do. Right. And that puts a lot of burden on the user. And the more they can do, the more they can't do, unless we get to like complete perfection. And so it's like, you know, the quote from that Ben Evans essay is, it's like, AI is always what the software can't do, because once the software can do it, it's just software. Right. And so it's like, as these AIs get more and more powerful, there's still things that they won't be able to do. And it's going to be even harder from a user interface perspective to know what it can and can't do, right? It's like you're going to need very good user interface that's beyond chat.
Your assumption is also that there are a few model providers that run away on a performance basis. And by our own standards and research that has been done by Frank and Joseph, open source models are near on performance. So I just don't understand where this leap in performance and how the largest companies in the world won't be able to catch up to them. What exactly is happening that OpenAI is doing?
I think it's inaccurate.
That to me doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
they're commodities. Like the LLMs are commodities.
Nick, let Brett talk.
Yeah, they're commodities.
To say blanket like open source models is catching up, I think is inaccurate. To say Meta is gaining capability, you know, at least on, you know, some of the more widely used benchmarks faster than OpenAI is, as measured over the last year, is accurate, right? And so I would distinguish between just broadly open source, as in, oh, there's going to be all these things popping up like poppies, and they're all going to be as performant, and the fact that Meta is willing to spend tens of billions of dollars to try to develop a frontier model, kind of open source, at least open up the weights for others to build on top of, so that, because they have their own ways to use it, you know, on the consumer interface side. And by the way, like, I think you could argue that Meta is much better positioned here than Apple, and actually could be the mechanism by which they already have the distribution, you know, and they're going to have wildly performant models, and kind of like consumers are going to be intolerant of kind of like only being able to access kind of Meta's ecosystem within Android or iPhone. Clearly they have enough market power that they can guide consumers around that.
But they don't have context.
They don't have the distribution without Apple. That's why they're trying to build their own hardware.
Wait, they definitely have distribution without Apple.
Okay, yeah, Android.
I mean, most of their distribution is Android.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is a very well-known fact that Zuckerberg has been trying to get out under the thumb of Google and Apple and out of their ecosystem because he understands the significance of it. Like, if you're just an application, you're not, you don't own this. Like, I
let me return to your original assertion and question. So part of what's happened in AI is there is an ethos of publication of results that carried through all the way through GPT-3. And then kind of like the next stage models, companies began to stop publishing exactly what the secret sauce was behind their models because they realized how commercially valuable they were. And that feeds through all the way into like model architecture, kind of how do you reinforcement learn, train the models? What are you doing on the data side to dope it with more valuable data? And kind of like what the trajectory of improvement is likely to be, like where do you push in order to make these models better? So I think that there's a strong possibility that actually performance dispersion is higher on a go forward basis, not narrower. Now, that doesn't mean that OpenAI necessarily wins. I think that there's plenty of evidence that performance is going to continue to improve, but like they could go down one track and Anthropic goes down another track and suddenly Anthropic's model is a lot better. And we wouldn't know the reason why. And because we don't know the reason why, there's no like, reason ex ante for Meta to follow the same correct track. So I think that you have a set of like front runners here, and you could say like Google is one of them, except they have no urgency and real mania at getting this right. OpenAI clearly is in front now. Anthropic, XAI has interesting data and distribution through X, and then Meta clearly has amazing distribution and data through its panoply of platforms. And of those, you know, you're going to uncover like the map 2 years from now, and some of them will have, you know, advanced possibly in an amazing and meaningful way. And Apple's privacy stance actually probably impairs it from even catching up. It's one. And two, with a dispersion in performance here, it's likely that one or two models catch on, get into this virtuous cycle of users using them because they're radically useful, that provides them with data, which allows them to extend their lead, which allows them to become the front-end experience for people's digital lives. I think that's probably the direction things go. And at a high level, the discussion here is, well, what does that really mean for Apple? Does it mean that, well, Apple still gets to get its great gross margins on its hardware and kind of people keep buying their constellation of devices and people are like have Siri, which again has become a joke because Apple has fallen behind again and people are just using this as like an alternate thing? Or does it really mean that, gosh, it's no longer net convenient for me to like be a subscriber to the Apple ecosystem? I think that's a possibility. It's not, it's not 100%, but it's definitely a threat.
Right. Right. I agree. But I think we're describing two extremes. One is like AI becomes incredibly good and context no longer matters because it navigates the web as good as a human. And the other side of it is, you know, Apple continues to not make Siri good in any way. Right. That's kind of the picture you've painted.
No, I'm saying Siri gets better. I'm saying Siri gets better, but it's like the degree to which it gets better is still like lagging behind the degree to which actual kind of AI models unfettered are providing performance advance.
I know, but it's like the piece that I want to throw out here is Apple, the frontier models today are amazing. They're incredible. But they are not ready for Apple. They're not. It's like if you unleashed the frontier models today to every single smartphone user, that would be a terrible, terrible experience.
I mean, it would be an expensive experience.
It wouldn't be expensive. It's like the people wouldn't even know what to do with it. You have to user prompt it. You get hallucinations. Everyone's like, oh, I don't trust this. It's like, that is the Siri problem. The whole world would say AI is terrible. There's too many things. When I try and use it, it doesn't work. It's like Apple's not necessary. I don't think Apple's as behind as everyone frames it.
It's
because the frontier model is not ready for the mass market.
Apple's in the driver's seat. That's what you're not seeing here, Brett. Apple holds the key to how fast this space progresses and how many people interact with AI.
That's I wouldn't frame it in the driver's seat. The way that I like to think of it more of as a chess game.
They're like on a different road. Apple's on like a set of train tracks, and then there's a whole open network of roads that people are navigating that are, you know, ultimately going to be a more interesting spot to be. But for now, the train is running. That's how I think about it.
I would frame it as it's like Apple's pawn structure is good. Right? It's too early in the game. It's too early in the game. And it's like for everything that's available, they are making the right moves. It's like, I don't think it makes sense for them to put frontier models in everyone's hand, just willy nilly, right? It's like the fact that they're abstracting out the prompt engineering for image generation, I think is incredibly smart because the average person even today makes terrible images, right? It's like even the song generation, you get like crazy hits, but the average person makes terrible songs with the song generation. It's like the same thing with the camera. It's like you can give someone the best camera in the world and an amateur photographer takes terrible photos because they're not good at it. It's like, so they're bringing the AI to the people in a sensible way. And it's
I think where I agree with you is that, yes, Apple is trying to make decisions for users that are kind of like design/intuition-based decisions upon how they want to use these tools. Just like when software development happens today, people decide, well, these are what is going to be in the menu items in each thing. Like these are the settings that users want to do. And I do think that AI has it requires a different philosophy to really tap its full power, as in there has to be user discovery has to be a part of it. And actually it has to lead kind of like the, and maybe that's just where we are at the stage of AI. Maybe you're right. It's like, these systems are so open-ended that the average user can't really grapple with like, oh, well, how do I use this thing? When do I know to trust it versus not? But I think being in a stance where your users are actually exploring the entire space of the AI models gets you into a spot where that data kind of informs how you make choices about how you're going to guide user choices in how they use it. And Apple is not in a strategic stance where they're going to be able to get that information.
All right. We lost Nick. Nick couldn't stand.
Nick got fed up and left.
Nick couldn't stand the debate. So, Greg, question. 10 years from now, is Apple disrupted or chugging along?
I think that it depends on your definition of disrupted.
I'm leaving it vague for compliance purposes.
I think that 10 years from now, you know, they have such a strong balance sheet and such a strong distribution that I think that they can enact all sorts of operations, financial and otherwise, to remain relevant. Just like IBM, you know, pivoted to a services model. They did a lot of stock buybacks. You know, there's a lot that you can do once you're effectively X growth, once you're no longer the marginal lead to both deliver returns to shareholders and protect your competitive stance. I think Apple is within that realm of play now. I think like their privacy stance is both net beneficial, users will find it useful, and it impairs their ability to actually push the frontier of technology forward. And I think being off the frontier of technology measured over the decade is never been a more dangerous spot to be. Nick, counter argument? 10 years from now, Apple is just the same behemoth. It's just everybody owns 3 iPhones and 6 AirPod Pros.
I think in 10 years from now, if Apple executes correctly on the vision they've laid out, they've laid out for Siri, no price targets, Siri will become the de facto digital assistant that you interact with via voice, text, however you want to spin it, maybe future generations of hardware, AR, VR. It is what you described as an operating system that extends beyond just your smartphone. It's embedded deeply into your hardware at home. And it's going to be Siri and maybe one or two other digital assistants that run your life. And it's going to be something where you simply prompt it and it can carry out tasks across what will likely be a layer on top of the current ecosystem, which is applications and websites. They'll be able to scroll, embed, and carry out functionality in the exact way that you describe. I think the difference in what I'm coming to understand is you just think that OpenAI is going to be able to create that. And I think I would agree that they have a chance to, because their performance is likely to outpace, but distribution and context and the ecosystem owning what is currently being used by everyone in the world is extremely important. And if you can build off of that, if you can execute on that, you can build the digital assistants that run our lives in the future.
I think
Apple is one of those companies.
I think a difference here or a challenge here is with AI systems in particular, because the developers don't even know what they're capable of, the need to get feedback from users against the entire breadth of what they could be capable of is more important. And Apple is willfully blinding itself to, one, they are restricting what users can do with the system. So users aren't allowed to explore the full space, at least within their scope of view. And they're also restricting their ability to see how the users are using the system. And I think that will impair their pace of development. And so they will continue, they will serve as a distribution channel and probably an important one, but it'll be an increasingly dumber pipe for kind of increasingly performant AI systems that somebody else has developed. And you know, they are in much better shape if there are a lot of interchangeable models out there if OpenAI and Anthropic and XAI and Google all have kind of like similarly performant systems, they'd net prefer that because then they have all kinds of negotiating leverage for that distribution channel. But if there's one that's out there, then or two, then their relative economic position is net weakened. And listen, I would love if they would have like, you know, AirPod Pros with a camera on them that I could, you know, talk to and would be amazingly performant. I own a lot of Apple devices. I would love if they could deliver actually a compelling, magical product here. I'm actually somewhat skeptical of the performance once it comes out, what it'll look like. And long term, I'm really skeptical about their strategic wherewithal, given just how dominant they are in the existing paradigm. It's so hard to move from a position of dominance to like a new position under a new user interface regime. It hasn't happened. So could it happen? Yeah, but it, actually, I think odds are against.
It's always funny to me to hear that too, because Apple doesn't seem like it's in the, it's like, to me, the public opinion isn't that Apple's in a position of dominance. Like
within touch? I mean,
well, within touch it is, but I'm just saying it's like, what, like in 1984, I imagine the headlines were more like touting of IBM's dominance in this. Whereas it's like, if you look, people are like, oh, smartphone sales have peaked. It's pretty much flat here. Apple's not in control. Everyone's like, will Apple do something here? I don't think people are saying Apple's,
the information I've received, people still think that the Apple Vision Pro is going to be like the magical next domain of computing that is going to totally win. Like people are, they think that is like a masterstroke. And right now, search volume for the iPod is higher than for the Vision Pro. The iPod was discontinued 2 years ago. Like this is, you know, I think that there's a lot of kind of belief in the fact that Apple
in their capability
can just do whatever the next thing is. And I'm more skeptical.
I agree. I mean, I think I've come on this and said my piece on the Vision Pro, and I agree that the Vision Pro is a poorly calculated device in the current market, given where VR is headed. And we can go, you know, another hour on that. But I do think you have to give credit where credit is due. And again, I just look at the way that they position themselves to take advantage of the current AI landscape. What I saw yesterday is exactly, in my opinion, what they needed to do to set themselves up to win a substantial part of this market and to fend off competition.
Yeah,
because they've allowed it to come in, but they've kept it at arm's distance. This is not the same. The OpenAI deal is not the same as the Safari and Google search deal. It is completely different.
I agree.
Search is a $20 billion annual, you know, fee to Apple, and you have to use, or you're essentially, it's the default if it's there. This is just it's an afterthought. Like I'm surprised. I mean, OpenAI has to do it because they've, you know, topped out on users and they can't seem to distribute it at a $20 price point. So they're like, we need to, you know, do this. I think it's more favorable for Apple than OpenAI, if we're being honest, especially if they're going to open it up to other third parties. I think it puts all of them in a special playing field where people view them as, oh, that's, you know, that's what else is out there, but I'll just use Apple's by default because it's good enough.
Yeah. And it's also not comparable to the Microsoft IBM deal in 85. I don't think, as in, I agree, like what Apple has announced and released is strategically sound. And I think that if kind of like pace of innovation on the AI side is net slower, I think they're amazingly well positioned. I think, as with Google, I think that there is just a wider dispersion in potential outcomes for Apple than there has been in a long time here. Just because they are like executing strategically does not mean that kind of like the, I'm not sure I agree that their pawn structure is good. I think they have like good pawn structure on one side and then like a kind of messy position on the other. And so I think that they have exploitable weakness that it's not by any fault of their own. It's because of their kind of like establishment of dominance in their current set of devices and kind of the strong adherence to privacy, which has benefits and weaknesses, that sets them up for, you know, an uncertain future, to be honest.
All right. So we'll model it out on the iPad calculator app.
But I'm going to use that's an amazing product. That looks amazing. I want it.
But yeah. Here's a question. If you can stop listening, if you've made it this far, just going to keep going here, but the screen mirroring for iPhone on desktop, I feel like not enough people are talking about this. It's like what does that say about where we are? This is like mobile finally killing desktop. It's like, your biggest, like people are so excited about this and it's just your phone, but you're like, thank God, I don't need to look at my phone. It's on my screen. To me, this stood out as something that seemed so bizarre.
I think that their OS strategy, where they have iPad OS, iOS, Mac OS, and TV OS, is a little wacky, particularly iPad OS in the middle that nobody or not many people developed for. Even they didn't develop a calculator app for it until like now. And I think that it really points to, like, you know, as a company develops over time, they end up with just, it's not just tech debt, but it's also kind of user interface debt and kind of like form factor debt and fragmentation. Like, one of my fundamental issues with Apple is I think their devices work less well cohesively, or have worked less well cohesively over time. My HomePod can't play Apple Music half the time. I don't know why, but it's because they have so many different kind of like devices to try to sync up that it's just a harder development environment for them. And so I think that fragmentation over time, it degrades user experience. It means it for me, net, it's like I would never have considered leaving the ecosystem 3 years ago. And now I'm like, well, how could I do that? How painful would it be? And I feel like there's people out there that feel that. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, I feel like it is a failure, right? It seemed like the goal was collapse everything into iPad-ish OS, but that clearly didn't work. And so now it's like, all right, just double down on mobile.
Yeah.
I think you can reverse the fragmentation, back to Brett's point, by offering a cohesive operating system on top powered by AI. Right. Like, all of this could, in theory, live under the umbrella, which is Siri OS.
Yeah.
As in, you query Siri on your phone and it's able to carry out tasks on your desktop or iPad. I mean, that's what I keep coming back to. It's, you know, you're talking about hardware and all of these functionalities. They have the hardware in the house. They have the wearables market. You know, there's only a few companies that have extended themselves into every facet of our lives. And those companies, in my opinion, not to keep beating this drum, sit in the driver's seat. Regardless of where they are on performance today, I just don't place that much on model performance because of how fast we've seen new models come out and be just as performant.
Well,
like, we're talking about two years that we've been talking about this for 2 years, and it's like every week we get a follow-on of a company or a feature that just comes out and it's just slightly better than what was previously released the week before. So I just don't place importance on model performance today.
Yeah, I think you're both right in that kind of like, if the models are going to be 100 to 1,000x more performant 2 to 3 years from now, 2 or 3 years from now, who cares what they can do today? Kind of where you're wrong is, well, then therefore kind of like successfully leashing yourself to the company that's going to improve its product by 100 to 1,000x is probably the better spot to be than the company that is kind of just going to be a distribution point for that product, I think.
Maybe.
All right. Yes.
We got to end it. It's,
yeah.
We're probably
going to go full circle.
I'm sure we'll discuss this more. And I know we said we'd have a special guest. Brett's pretty special, but we're gonna do it. We'll have another special guest for the one year anniversary of the Brainstorm.
The truth about my eye is that Nick and I got in a fight about Apple
over this, yeah,
over AI, and he hit me in the face with an iPhone.
All right.
And this isn't even, we haven't even actually had the brainstorm yet. This is a pre-brainstorm. Usually it's post-brainstorm. Yeah. So this is all going to get hashed out again on Friday. Maybe we'll all change our opinions. Who knows?
All right. See everyone next week.